Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 86. Dow Futures up 123. So all is right with the world. Market's up. And no matter what else happens, everything's cool. If you're one of those people that own the stacks, which... it's cool for a lot of my clients own stacks, so I guess it's a good thing. Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I just was wondering, I hope you weren't the person I was hearing about this morning on the radio. There's a guy who's lost in Colorado in the mountains, and his rescuers looking for him, but he refused to answer them on the cell phone because he didn't recognize the number.
I did not hear that story.
Are they teaching stupidity in schools these days, or what?
I must admit that I rarely, if never, answer phone numbers that I don't recognize, but I think I'd make an exception in that case.
As I asked my nephew, who does the same thing, and I said, what if, like, you're out somewhere, you know, enjoying the evening, having a beer, and you ran into some young lady, and you, somehow or another, she is blind enough to want your phone number, and then you don't answer it because you don't recognize it. What are you, some kind of moron? She might actually like you. Oh, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. I guess
I'm not in that situation right now, so that hypothetical won't work for me.
Well, it could be somebody who just won the lottery.
That's why you just tap your phone. That's what if you're there and you think there's a connection and you exchange phone numbers, you just tap your phone, or one calls the other right in front of the other to make sure you have each other's phone number.
Oh, I see. Well, that's tap your phones. Is that considered
like a phone kiss?
Is that foreplay?
I don't know what you call it. Maybe it is a type of foreplay.
It's the modern version of writing her number down on a napkin and putting it in your pocket.
Yeah.
That's
But you could easily get around that napkin by just having one person call the other person right there, and then you know the number that you stored. And unless you're too drunk to remember where you got that number when it came in at that night, you got it, and... well, you each have each other's phone number.
If you don't attach a name to it right away, that could be real dangerous.
That's true. How many
people are you getting numbers from in a given night?
Well, a guy like me, it could be multiple.
Fair point. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so
I will say, there's nothing worse when before cell phones, when you would get a girl's number, which happened to me one time I can remember very specifically. In college, getting a girl's number and being very excited about it and then losing the napkin.
Yeah.
because it's a long drunken night and it falls out of your jacket or whatever, and then the next morning you wake up and you're like, God, what a great night, and you go in the jacket pocket to fish out the number and it's not there.
Plus, I would say that
you never see her again.
Plus in those days when you didn't carry a phone around.
That's what I mean.
I mean, you usually didn't carry
mobile phones.
Like, I got a quick story about you know, who knows what could have been or whatever. There I was jogging in the park, right, minding my own business years and years ago, and they were messing around with the sidewalk right by what's that thing in the middle of where by the very south end of Lincoln Park. There's that building they never seem to use for anything, Brandon. There's an old Park District building, but I never saw them use the thing for anything. It's like in the middle where you. get down there and all of a sudden you circle around the whole thing, the very south end.
Oh, baseball fields? That's an old small field house and bathrooms.
Well, yeah, I never, anyway, but you used to have, when you made it down there, then you'd run around the baseball fields on a big loop, which is like almost a mile, right? Or it's three quarters of a mile. So anyway, I'm coming back and there's this little thing in the sidewalk and this very attractive young lady is running along and she trips on the thing and lands. Like, skins the hell out of her knee, and she's kind of a little bit dazed. I'll bet five people, including, like, three goofy guys, just run right by her. And I'm thinking, I stop and reach down. She has my hand up. She comes. And we start BSing. So she goes, well, I'm ready, even though her knee's bleeding. She was a gamer. And so off we jog for a little bit, and then she starts telling me how she's in from Philadelphia for a wedding, and the wedding was yesterday, and blah, 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 and she was out running, but she had to make, you know, airplane, and pretty much... So we talked for a little while, and off she went, and I'm thinking, I got no pen, no piece of paper. She lives in Philadelphia. What's the difference? But here, and then I thought, gee, maybe the big guy upstairs just dropped one literally right in front of me, and I just blew it. I mean, she was perfect. She's pleasant. She's good looking. A runner. And didn't seem to, her skin knee didn't seem to bother her, so she wasn't a whiner. And I'm thinking, did I just blow this? The guy just dropped one right in front of me, and I just... I didn't have a girlfriend at the time.
Your life could have changed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you could be celebrating your 50th wedding anniversary with a passel of kids and grandkids, and all because you didn't carry a pen with you and piece of paper when you're out running.
Well, plus, I was in really good shape at the time, so I could just as easily have jogged a mile over to her hotel and then sure get written down with the guy at the doorman or something, but...
Well, that plus you could have made sure she got back to her hotel safely because of her injured knee and make sure that she wasn't just dazed and confused.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Let me at least jog you to the doorman. I mean, for God's sake.
So I went from being the nice guy who picked her up to the idiot who didn't get the number.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. But I'm saying, why did the other guys just run right by her?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, somebody just fell. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's bad.
And, anyway,
yeah, so
there's different kinds of people.
I think runner's etiquette would be that you stop to make sure the person's okay. If you saw the person go down like that, you definitely stop to ask if they're okay, whether it's a male or female, how old they are. It's just common courtesy.
Oh, I know. It's I wonder if you've read the same things, Brendan, and these are psychology studies that I read in school. This, you know, I remember all this stuff when I see what's happening in the world today. In the ads, they said because they had people do this kind of on purpose, if you feign like a heart attack or something on a street in New York or whatever and down you go, everybody walks by you. But if you do that like on a trail or on a path or a jogging path where you're the only person there, the one person comes by, they will always stop to help you.
Yeah, that's called Kitty Carlisle or something. It was a woman who was struggling in New York and being attacked, and people open up their windows and look. But the theory behind that is that everybody, if there's a group of people, everybody expects somebody else to act, and therefore they're relieved from the responsibility of acting. However, if you're the only one around and you see something happen, you're more likely to get engaged because you know nobody else will step in and help.
That has to be it. But some people just react to stuff. We went one night to a game. I don't want to get into story stuff today because I'm talking about people's behavior, I guess. And maybe the market's behavior, sort of the same thing. Audrey says, let's go to a ball game. We'll use her friend Sarah's tickets. I don't know who had the tickets, Sarah or Larry. But they had the tickets that were, I think they were number 12 on the list or something because they were Merrill Lynch's tickets. And back in a fit of the something during the 70s, Merrill Lynch decided that they didn't want to have tickets because, you know, I don't know, some scrutiny on firms or something. So they give the tickets up, and these guys end up with them. But the problem was they were so good. I think they were the fourth row behind home plate at Old Comiskey. But Old Comiskey was so bleeped up, if anybody remembers the place. They had to keep raising the field because of the runoff from the Ryan would actually back up onto the field in a big rainstorm. So by that time, second base was over your head, if you're sitting there. So it was really weird to try and watch a game. Anyway, so we go to a game, and she goes, well, I didn't tell you, but we got somewhat of a problem. You know, the typical, you don't get the whole story. I go, what exactly is the problem? Well, we got to get security and boot some people out of the seat. And I go, why do we do that? We have tickets. Well, the original season tickets that were shipped home to Larry or Sarah, whoever that was, somebody stole them. So they got a new set, but every time you go to the game, whoever stole them sold them to somebody. So I go, you got to be kidding me. So, of course, it's a guy and his dad on the night before Father's Day that had bought the tickets for the dad.
God.
And I'm sitting there, all right, I don't want to boot these people out. Let's just go sit somewhere else. Oh, no. So we get security. I tell you what, security was very nice. They wanted the name of the person they bought them from. They're trying to track the guy down who stole the tickets in the mail, because they stole them in the mail, which is a big deal. And so we sit down, and now it's the bottom of the first. The Sox are already down 10-0, right? So there's not much of a game. Now, we just booted this poor guy out. So then somebody hits a foul ball that just misses the net, flies back, and whacks this lady right in the face.
Good Lord.
This is all within, like, 10 minutes after I got there. And the interesting part was, everybody, you know, it missed her eye, but it was right, you know, if you ever get, Maddie, I'm seeing the shirt, it's in a basketball game, if you ever get an elbow, like where your eyebrow, I mean, it'll bleed all over the place, but it's like one stitch and you're okay, or two stitches. I mean, it's
right.
Like, as long as it misses your eye, you're pretty much okay, unless it breaks the bone. All of a sudden, this girl's bleeding, and there must have been 15 people scattered, like if it was a stink bomb or something. And one guy within 10 seconds had a clean handkerchief out, applying pressure to the wound. He went right towards her instead of the other way. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know if this guy was a military something, or he just was a regular guy. Instead of
or a doctor.
He might have just been a guy that knew that's what you're supposed to do, and wasn't afraid to take action. When all of a sudden people came down on a stretcher, they had the guy, they kept his clean handkerchief, put another press. They said she'll be all right, and off they went. And I think she came back like three innings later and sat down with two stitches, and was thanking the guy. But it's amazing how some people dashed, and one guy was right there. And I'm sitting there going, if that ever happens, I'd like to be the guy who's right there instead of the guy who dashes. You know, but I think your first reaction is probably to get away a little bit, but then you got to stop that. Anyway.
Well, so, would you have a clean handkerchief on you?
How many people carry a handkerchief anymore?
Exactly. It'd be tough to be the first guy if you don't have anything to put on the wound.
Would you have a piece of paper and a pen to get her number?
Well, he was an older guy. She was a younger lady, but I don't think that's what he was doing it for.
So he probably had a pen and paper.
He might have had a pen and paper because he was an older guy.
Or at least had a scorebook and a pencil.
Yeah. So, Brandon, I'm going to switch real quick. Thankfully, you're here, and I don't have to do a Paul Harvey page two thing. What do you think's going on? I mean, we're looking at the market, and all of a sudden we were down a couple of weeks ago, and now we're flying up. And we have this Fed meeting next week, where if you look at everything I'm doing for my people now, which I never do, okay, doing something totally out of context, because normally I want to buy my put protection out pretty far. Right now there's a bifurcation. How's that for word this hour? The Fed meeting is next Tuesday and Wednesday. So the volatility on the options that expire Monday night, the implied volatility of the price of the option, is appreciably cheaper than the ones on Wednesday. So I'm just buying the ones for Monday and riding the week out, whichever way it is, even though that's not what I normally want to do. And the Fed is on line for this. And again, I'm on this human psychology question. Everybody's talking now. Even the people that are blind are talking about this inflation. And you've got Fed people coming out. We're not going to see them this week because they're in their quiet period. Fed people coming up talking about there's inflation. We don't know how long it's going to last. A couple even said, what I don't get, Brendan, is everybody knows that anybody who's ever had, even though I'm startled by the lack of economic knowledge of some of the people that are on TV making $1 million a year. I'm stunned, but I guess I should not be stunned. Everybody should know that the Fed has caused this problem, all right? And they are absolutely involved in it because they're talking about, you know, the taper next week. What possesses somebody right now today, this week, they're running for an absolute record, huge amount record for balance sheet? I mean, what causes these guys now that even they have figured out that there's a big problem here and that they, for one, have caused it? Why can't they turn off the spigot today? Why do they have to call and say, last week they put $85 billion into the balance sheet? What is so, are they telling the people that we don't like that are running the country? I'm not talking about Biden either. Are they saying, we're giving you one more week to get out? We're going to be at absolutely record balance sheet. We're going to go, what, over $8.6 trillion by next week? So then when we pull back 5 or 10 a day, it won't make any difference. I mean, there's a motivation here, Brendan. What is it? I know what it seems to be, but I don't. What is it? What is the motivation that they just can't? It's like, you know, talking about Matty Weber in the middle of the pool drowning and talking about how maybe you should rescue him instead of hopping in and doing it. I don't get it.
I think they're trying to, I mean, from a psychological standpoint, you were talking about that earlier with the guy not answering his cell phone, but, you know, you're trying to dictate the narrative, even though you can't. You know, there are certain things that are expected, or if you want a certain outcome, you're trying to drive that certain outcome, even if it flies in the face of experience and fact.
Well, I don't, maybe they're not, you know, I'll ask you. I mean, if you, I imagine you have a, not going to ask, but I imagine you have a nice IRA 401k someplace. I'm guessing it's probably in some mutual funds, but I don't know. And for your purposes, I'm going to guess, because you're probably not borrowing money against it, that if the market goes up 10% and goes down 10%, you think you're even. I mean, no harm, no foul. I mean, you'd wish you'd have, you know, sold it higher, but do you really? You basically, you know, you made it on the way up, and now you lost it on the way down, and you're kind of right where you were 2 months ago. Do you think these people don't recognize that for the rest of the world that's not the case?
Well, whether they recognize it or not, I'm not sure that they really care, because they're looking at a broader perspective nationally and internationally, what the outcome is, and they're trying to drive that without a real concern for Chief or Maddie or Brendan or anybody else in particular. You're almost kind of collateral damage in what happens, because the overall arc is what they want it to be.
But why do you want to drive something to an unsustainable spot? Is it tax related?
I can't answer why they would do that. I mean, I don't understand the rationale, except you don't want to be wrong. I mean, you don't want to appear to be wrong before you're wrong.
You think it has anything to do? I mean, even if you watch the TV for a minute or read anything, there's this massive brouhaha going back about taxes, back and forth. Why is it nobody ever mentions the limit of $3,000 a year on capital gains losses being taken? Why is that number is the same as when I joined the business when the Dow was 800? Why has that never been adjusted?
I'm surprised with that too. And that was always one of the dumbest things and I thought punitive things that was ever in the tax code. I agree with you completely, and I am shocked that is never brought up in any kind of tax reform talks, at least that I've seen in any news reports.
Well, because I honestly believe that for two reasons. If you run by, you know, you print a bunch of money and you run the market way up, and let's say it goes down. Maybe it won't. Maybe they're going to keep trying to keep it. Let's say it goes down someday. I mean, you talk about, and again, I don't want to give any investment advice, but the Snapchat that came out yesterday and the market had the trap door thing. It was down 20-some bucks, 30% or whatever it was. Brendan, they don't make any money. They don't make revenue. Maybe they have the world's greatest idea. And 3 years from now, the thing is going to be, you know, whatever. It could be fantastic, which I hope it is, because for the people that own the place. But right now, it's not worth anywhere near $80 a share. It's worth maybe $5, you know, in my mind. Maybe $10. If you look like an old guy with a 4 flat or something, let's say that they have a great idea and the market is the market. So you can't, maybe start shorting a thing, you're going to get carried out. So, it's not the idea that I'm saying anybody goes short. I'm just saying there have been times when it would have been valued a lot less, okay? That's all I'm saying. But the way it worked during the 90s, and I think one of the reasons why Clinton happened to be in office when we had a surplus, is when the market ran way up and then collapsed down, I think the people who sold at the top had to pay taxes, and the people who bought at the top and then lost all that money couldn't get their money back from the taxes. or there's a real discontinuity there. That if Snap runs from 50 to 80, just so everybody's clear, it runs from 50 to 80, and you own 1,000 shares, and you sell it to me at 80, and it drops back down to 50, you need to pay capital gains on $30, and I only get to deduct $3,000.
Yep. Yeah, that is horrible. And you're right. It's a disincentive in so many ways, and punitive in so many ways. And it never really made sense to me.
But the other thing is, if there's margin, and we're moving very, very rapidly, if we're not already there yet. By the way, those guys who have the how the hell did those idiots? No, I shouldn't say that. How did that firm? How did they become the patch on the umpires, Matty? That FX. Well, who are those guys? You know who those guys are? That they're
company? I didn't notice a patch on the umpires.
Oh yeah, there's a
sponsorship.
Yeah.
None of the Major League Baseball uniforms have patches on them.
No, but the umpires do now.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You haven't seen that F? Is it FTX or F something? You can't really tell on home. Well, yeah, you can, but they all got the patch on them.
Yeah, it's FTX. I'm looking at an article here from back in late June of this year that says FTX strikes sponsorship deal with MLB umpires, their union.
And I think those guys.
The CEO of FTX was on CNBC the other day, and I was watching him. It looks like a 25-year-old kid that's owns a multi-billion-dollar company.
Those guys, somebody was telling me that they will lend you 10-1 on Bitcoin.
Really?
That they're a European Bitcoin lender. I don't know what else they do. I mean, as I'm asking you, what else? What does it say they do?
Let me find out.
I'm saying we're reaching a point now. We're lending money on this Bitcoin. So whatever. So two things happen when markets collapse. Usually, it's near a top in margin loans, so people are forced to sell because they're margin loans. And inevitably, when you have margin loans problems and you have the tax issue, for somebody like me, you don't ever want the market to be undervalued. But you also don't ever want it to be overvalued where it comes back down, because people lose more money on the way down than they make on the way up.
It says FTX is a cryptocurrency derivatives exchange.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they find ways to lend you money. Are they based in Europe or here?
I think they're based here because their CEO is American.
Okay. I think somebody told me they're lending to a place in Europe, but they might have been wrong.
But they could be.
Yeah.
Headquarters, it says their headquarters is in Nassau, Bahamas.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean,
they were founded in May 2019.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. They were founded 2 years ago, and it's already a multi-billion-dollar company, apparently.
Well, as long as the Bitcoin goes up. They had a guy on the other night, and I couldn't believe it. He goes, Brendan, we have to decide whether it's a commodity or a security. How about neither? What would you say it is?
I'd say it's more like a commodity than a security.
Well, what's the commodity? What's behind it?
Well, I don't know. What's behind it is a security.
Well, neither. I mean, nothing there either. That's my point. But a commodity is usually rice or corn or wheat or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, real quick, we don't have much time. But are you an expert on these carbon things, the Tesla? Tesla just went over $1 trillion in market cap yesterday. If it wasn't for selling these carbon things, they'd never make a dime, the way I look at it.
I haven't had a chance to look into that. I'm not real familiar with that or the credits. But it was interesting a little bit ago when you were talking about the valuation of Snapchat, and I was comparing that to Tesla, which, for years and years did not make a dime, and yet kept getting increase in valuation. Now it seems like they've turned the corner, but it is interesting how there's speculation on things like that.
But the original question,
I'm not that familiar with the tax, with the carbon credit, so I'm going to have to look into that a little bit more.
I think we should give this job to Carl. He's perfect at it. He loves doing this stuff. I think they're selling like up into the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of these things every quarter. That That's almost all their revenue. I mean, not their revenue, but their any kind of profit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember, we were in, I'm not dating us, but we were in school when people started talking about this pollution, being able to trade pollution credits. Remember? That was a big deal. I think it came out of the University of Chicago or someplace like that, Stanford, where the idea was that at least if you're going to have pollution, that you should get your the biggest bang for your buck. That if you're going to, you know, if you're going to smell up the air, it shouldn't be the two of us burning leaves in our backyard. It should be a factory that's actually making something for people that you can't make any other way, right? And the idea
was, bigger go home.
Yeah. Well, the idea was that if somebody actually had to pay money, the highest bidder would be the person, you know, making diamonds, not hula hoops, or making, you know, medicine or something. And that's the theory behind it. Mm-hmm. And the theory, I think, makes an awful lot of sense. I can't imagine. What do you think would happen if we looked into how the program actually works? I bet we'd be appalled like every other program. I mean, kind of scary. Who do you like in the World Series?
If you're going to pollute, you want to make more pollutants instead of less pollutants for a cheaper amount of money.
Well, I mean, the idea is you want it to be something worthwhile, you know, that if you are going to pollute, a little bit for like, just for an example, I don't know anything about it. You might want to do rare earth metals so you don't have to buy them from China because everybody needs a cell phone and the other stuff may actually need that stuff, right? So you'd rather do it for that than somebody, you know, polluting just for the hell of it, you know, I mean, for something you can get without polluting. I'm saying the idea was that there'd be an economic incentive to do that. But by the way, who do you like in the World Series since we have you?
Well, I think the World Series. I think the Astros are going to be really tough to beat. I mean, they just seem like a juggernaut, and I think that they're going to do better than the Braves. I think they'll beat the Braves. I think Dusty Baker will finally get his World Series ring as a manager.
I don't see those guys losing either. As much as I can't stand them, plus they cheat, but they look pretty good, don't they, Manny?
Yeah, going into the season. If you would have taken the Braves to win the World Series, it was paying out 10-1. The Astros were paying out 25-1 at the beginning of the season. Now, obviously, they're in it. The Astros are favored -154 versus the Braves +130. For the odds alone, I would take the Braves because the Braves every series have been underdogs in every series they've kind of dominated. So just for the odds alone, I would probably take the Braves. But the Astros are tough to beat, especially down in Houston. And that's, they have the home field.
Oh, they do have the home field. Yep. Now, how do they? Home field is now what? It's not the All-Star game anymore.
No, I think it's back to every other year.
That makes sense. Anyway. Well, Brendan, thank you very much, buddy. What was the? We never asked you. What was the story with the Chicago and Boston marathons? You said you had a couple people that ran both.
Yeah, had a few people who ran both, and they survived both. One guy that I had never made it to Boston because he was on a Southwest flight from Chicago to Boston, and his flight kept getting canceled or delayed, and there was no replacement flight, so he wound up missing the Boston Marathon.
How would you?
Crazy.
He ran it here on the streets of Chicago the next day. He was out in one of the northern suburbs. And ran around a park trying to do it virtually, but he was pretty pissed off because, you know, he obviously had a hotel in Boston and was ready to go and wanted to be on the news to be one of those folks who ran two marathons in 2 days and wasn't able to do it. But there were some people who did both. The reason for it was because normally Boston is the third Monday in April, which is Patriots Day, and the race director wanted to keep the tradition of a Monday race and on a holiday when New England was closed for the race, which happened to be Columbus Day. And, oh, by the way, Chicago's the day before because it's always on Columbus Day weekend. So it caused a little consternation, I think, among the World Marathon Majors about putting them on back-to-back days. But this year, all six World Majors were within 7 weeks. It turned out that Tokyo was virtual because they canceled their race in person and did it virtually. But five of the six majors were within 7 weeks of each other, including Boston and Chicago on back-to-back days.
We'll talk more about that next week. There's got to be some stories in there on the sponsors and everything. Brennan, thank you. SP Futures up 20. NASDAQ Futures up 94. We'll be right back. Joel and Conan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks, I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 1950, NASDAQ futures up 94 and a quarter. Dow futures one up 118. You got some earnings stacks, UPS up 910, so they obviously had some good earnings. And Microsoft up 217. There's a few others here that Joe will tell us about. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up almost 2%. These guys were down, and they're flying up. So we've got... It's worldwide money pouring in. It's pretty scary. But these guys are up 505, 1.77. However, the Shanghai is down 12.3%. Hang Seng down 93.3%. So these guys have not, when I say these guys, Asian markets have not moved together here sometimes, I mean, really kind of for a long time. It's pretty strange. The over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 144.9%, FTSE up 43.6%, CAC around up 45.7%. Bonds 1.61, actually that's actually down one basis point, but 1.61, actually 1.62 is the highest we've seen in a while. A Bund minus 0.13, so that's actually down two basis points. Japan, there we go, a positive 0.101, the highest we've seen in a while. Oil up down up 24 cents, $84. That's a new high, I think. Brent up 12 cents, 86.11. Natural gas down a penny, 588. Natural gas was up like 70 cents at one point yesterday. I'm going to have to ask Joel about that. I've never seen moves like this in natural gas. The good news is it's a huge contract. So if you get clobbered by 70 cents, it's a really bad day for you. RBOB up one cent to 253 in RBOB, man. So we're not getting gas under $3 anytime soon if wholesale is 253. Gold,
under $3. I'm trying to get under $4.
I know. It's hard. The lowest I saw in Indiana was 349. I think I paid 354 in the burbs. Gold down $1.70, but still over 1800, 1805. Silver down 15 cents, 2444. Copper down a penny, 451. And we've got Bitcoin down $91 to 62,713. It was over 63,000 yesterday, but still pretty darn high. Maddie, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. One significant crash in the area. It's over on the Tri-State northbound side just before Grand Avenue. That's blocking the left lane and causing congestion heading northbound on I-294, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. A traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Same for the south side. Lakeshore Drive is looking good. The suburbs are quiet except for one crash on the North Shore, US 41 at Park Avenue West. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some sunshine, cool temperatures, a high of 55. Right now it's clear and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 76 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, the Bulls are 4-0 on the early season. They won up in Toronto last night, 111-108. Blackhawks were off. They'll host Toronto on Wednesday. Coyotes played. They lost to the Panthers 5-3. They have an identical terrible record to the Blackhawks, 0-5-1 to start the NHL season. Monday Night Football, it was the Saints hanging on to beat Seattle 13-10. And lastly, the World Series begins tonight. Game one of the World Series will be in Houston as the Astros will host the Braves at 7 p.m. Central Time. Chief.
Do we have Joel?
We do.
Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I was actually discussing with somebody last night the Blackhawks, and they were talking about the how they got rid of the coach because everybody thought the team was going to be good this year. And I go, who possibly could have thought the team was going to be good this year? They picked up the aging goalie. They lose Duncan Keith, who was still playing like 32 minutes a game for him. Power play, penalty kill, like at least one defensive shift. They didn't replace him with anybody of that caliber. How could they possibly be any better? What is the world seeing here that I'm missing? They're not
think
even.
Joel knows anything about the Blackhawks?
Yeah, they just got clobbered by Detroit, so maybe he was at the game.
Oh, he was here. No, man. Thank you, Maddie, for the save there.
Just saying. Are you
no
ready?
No comment. I know absolutely nothing about hockey. Don't follow the Red Wings. Right. The Blackhawks. Is Eddie Balfour still the goalie?
That's what I would do, is welcome on our guest from Michigan, our markets expert and college football expert, and ask him about the Chicago Blackhawks.
I just made a reach. Joel strikes me as a guy who he knows everything about every sport.
Joel, what do you think about the Los Angeles Kings?
I could ask you that question. I thought Joel was
Gretzky. I love that. I still can't believe they pulled that trade off for Gretzky.
What are your thoughts about Bayern Munich soccer?
I bet you're going to end up being a lacrosse fan in Michigan the way the football team's going.
We're doing okay. Big game on Saturday. Don't understand the spread being the game at East Lansing. Started out at 6.5. It's moved down to 4.5. What Vegas is looking at is they're banking on Michigan shutting down that Kenneth Walker, a transfer from Wake Forest, and, keeping the ball out of their hands. And, if you shut down that running back, they got two really good wide receivers. So, I don't know. I'm not seeing what Vegas is seeing, but, they built those hotels with some kind of information and kind of some kind of edge. I mean, we're moving the ball. Not so much through the air, but on the ground, we lost our top wide receivers. So, big game. It's the first time both teams have been ranked in the top 10 since 1964.
Wow.
Undefeated and both ranked in the top 10.
What, Joel, it kind of used to be, and I didn't really put Michigan State in the same group, but it used to be that Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State really fought over the players. Now, granted, now it's gone to the skilled players down south and everything, but they used to all fight over the kids that came out of these, Pennsylvania and Ohio high schools where high school football is such a religion. Whichever coach seemed to be better at getting people out of those areas was dominant for a while. I mean, obviously Woody Hayes and the Ohio coaches got all the good guys out of Ohio. Once in a while, Michigan would and Penn State. Where's Michigan State's, I mean, where is their normal recruitment? And how is, second part of the question, how is all this transferring
it
made a difference to the your normal recruitment?
I mean, it's totally transformed, college football. I mean, it's made it more, and also the name and likeness. It's becoming more of a professional game. And, Mel Tucker came in from Michigan State, and I mean, he cleaned house. I mean, and he went on that transfer portal, and he brought in both the quarterback and the starting running back, that Kenneth Walker from Wake Forest, and it's just a whole new ball game now. With the transfer portal, and he has an eye for talent. I mean, there's a pretty good fight in Michigan. It's pretty split. It was in favor of Michigan State for a while. Now tilted back a little bit more even. But right now, I think it's the transfer portal bringing in guys with a year or two experience, as opposed to getting these coveted freshmen. I think that's where the focus is. And that's really what's helped Michigan State.
How do you, it's more, both of you guys can answer. How do you keep track of somebody? Say the Irish. They got, all right, 25 freshmen rolling in and they land there. How do you, if you're the coach of Michigan State or Stanford or any place, how do you figure out what's going on at the Notre Dame practice that here's a guy who's all of a sudden kicking ass and Kelly doesn't like the guy and all of a sudden the guy doesn't like Kelly and how do you figure out, other than the notes you had from the guy in high school, how do you figure out how much progress he's made, whether he's maturing? I mean, I gotta believe this third string quarterback on the Irish looks pretty good to me, but Kelly obviously doesn't like him because he's not a runner. But every time the kid was in there, he's got a quick release. he won the one game for him, but then he can't get back in because Kelly doesn't like him. It doesn't appear. I mean, I don't know that. But how do you keep scouting somebody on somebody else's team? It appears that's going on all over the place. How do you do that?
Oh man, I mean, it's the staffs. You know, they're hired. I mean, these staffs are huge at these. The Michigan football staff, the recruiting coordinators, the assistant coaches. I mean, it's a big money game, Chief, and they're spending that kind of money to do the extra phase of recruiting. Maybe they're taking a little bit emphasis off the college recruiting and making it more, in the transfer portal. At least that's the way it seems to me.
It's much easier to recruit a kid out of college than it is out of high school because they have every single play on tape.
Yeah, but I'm saying,
so they pull their name up in the portal and they can pull up all of their 32 games that they've played at the college level and watch every single snap.
But I have the same question on the. But I'm talking about the guys that don't play. How do you know the kid who got snubbed as a freshman because nobody likes him and want that type of thing?
In that instance, then you probably would have to go back to their high school tape and then see how much they're lifting now because they would have all that information in the portal and how much they've grown and how fast they're running now, and it'd be a little bit tougher.
So you put this stuff in. You're not supposed to hire an agent. So you're putting this stuff in the portal yourself, right? Is that the idea?
Who?
If you want to transfer,
my understanding.
What goes in the portal? Your name or your whole resume? I have no idea. I mean, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know if it's both. I assume there's something besides just your name. Otherwise, they can easily get that information. But I assume it's your name, your age, your grade. A little bit about your background, your GPA, probably your height and weight. And then they know something about you because they recruited you out of high school and they didn't get you and then now they can reestablish that relationship. That's probably the case in 90% of the transfers they get is they tried to get you out of high school and couldn't. So there's some sort of relationship there. Usually they're not going to go blindly to another school without a connection.
Okay, so in theory, somebody says, I don't like it here. I want to go somewhere else. The first thing that happens, if you believe this, is the kid himself puts himself in the portal. Without help of an agent, without somebody recruiting him first, if you believe that, I've got a bridge for you. I mean, is it getting? I mean, are they following any of the rules? I guess is my question. I mean, how would we know?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are, Chief. But listen, I got a hop here. Got the show at 8 a.m. A lot of earnings to cover. Runaway bull market here, Chief.
Yeah.
We're just breaking out here. I wish I could stay, but I got a hop. I'll talk to you guys next week. Okay?
All right, bud. Okay, take care. Let's stay on this time. A lot of stuff is sort of happening in this college ball. I mean, the transfers, some of these teams have almost half as many starters that are transfers that they recruited. I mean,
what's wrong with that? Who cares? Kids transferring from school to school all the time.
If it was just.
Without sports.
But if it was just wide open. Well, let me put it this way. The story.
It is wide open now.
Yeah, the story.
They didn't even get punished.
Well, the story was that you only wanted one round of recruiting. You didn't want people, well, let's put it this way. In my day, when you actually had a phone in the dorm room, you didn't want the roommate fielding phone calls from agents from agents from the kid all day long when he's supposed to be going to class, right? I mean, that was the theory of it. You at least stopped for a while. Although, people did transfer in those days.
Of course they did. People have been transferring forever. It's just gotten a lot bigger now.
Well, but you had to wait a year, which put a big damper on it. And now you certainly didn't last year, right? Because of the COVID.
Right. Now there's a lot more exceptions where you don't have to sit out a year. The letter of the law, my understanding is, and Kevin would know more about this, is that under normal circumstances, you do still have to sit out a year. But COVID, they waived that, and I don't know if that's, I think that's just a temporary thing. But there are, outside of COVID, a lot more other exceptions for not having to sit out the year.
Well, this guy that they fired at, was it Washington State or Washington or someplace for the neck of the vaccine? Who was the coach they just fired because he didn't have the vaccine like 2 weeks ago?
A football coach?
Yeah.
I missed that.
No, it was either Washington or one of those schools, Oregon, somebody up there. And now I think that means all his players now can transfer without having to sit, right?
That might be one of the exceptions I'm talking about. Yeah, if your coach leaves, either voluntarily or involuntarily, then you have the right to transfer without penalty. And I think that was a big one that they put in because kids were like, hey, you know, I committed to a coach, not a school, and that typically is the case. You commit to the coach, not the school, even though you probably should commit to the school.
Yeah.
And then the coach leaves for greener pastures and more money, and then you're stuck at that school. And then if you transfer, you're penalized and have to sit out a year. So I think they waived that you can transfer. So that would be an example there.
Yeah. By the way, we had an interesting conversation last week when you weren't here, and then all of a sudden, when I started it, I'm like, I should have waited for Maddie to be here. It had to do with Joe Jackson and his. This guy did a big rundown. I didn't realize that you could go back and. And essentially get all the that whatever year that was. It was 19, when was it? 1919 or something? The Black Sox scandal. I didn't realize you go back and get like play by play in all those games. And, you know, plus you never explained to us what is the win probability added? Do you have any idea? What is that?
Win probability added.
Or they judge your performance in like every game?
You talking about the individual player?
Yeah,
It's another one of those measurements that there's a formula to it. I mean, I'd have to look up what the actual formula is. By the way, yeah, I did find it. It was the Washington State head football coach Nick Rolovich, who I've never heard of, but he was at Hawaii for 4 years and had a pretty good run his last couple years at Hawaii, and then took the Washington State job in 2020. And went had in the COVID shortened year went 1-3, but then in his second year, he was 4-3 before he got fired.
Yeah, that's
so. You know, maybe he was in the process of turning that program around, but the state of Washington has a mandate for all of its state employees that you have to get vaccinated, and he refused, and so apparently him and a few of his top assistants were all terminated.
What is going to happen with that? Do you think the courts are going to?
Good question. Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion on it either way. I know a lot of people care about this a lot. I don't, but you know, I don't like the idea of telling people what to do. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we're having a baby here soon, and you know, every single daycare requires that your baby has its vaccine shots. And every time I board my dog, they require that we prove that he has his vaccine shots. So it's like. What's the difference?
They should give your dog a few other tests besides other than that.
Yes, but if your dog doesn't have his vaccine shots, they won't take him at the vet or at the dog shelter or at the daycare. That's for dogs, for God's sake. This has been going on way before my whole lifetime.
Yeah, you know,
I don't really care that much, but I know some people get worked up about it, and I understand. You know, it's a free country; people can get worked up about things. But this particular Washington State football coach, he knew what the rule was, and he decided not to break it, so he'll go get a job somewhere else. Who cares?
I had a long conversation with I saw him in person the other night with our friend Kevin, who's on a couple days a week, and it was interesting because Kevin has, you know, obviously a view of this, and it actually it's fairly similar to mine, even though I went and got the vaccine and so forth, because I actually think it. Despite all the idiocy that we see out of Washington, that for people my age, the vaccine's okay. I do not agree at all with jamming it on kids right now, because it makes me very nervous that Sweden, who I think cares about their people, and came out and said, we're not vaccinating people under the age of 12. It's too risky. I don't see how the hell Joe Biden doesn't call that president up and say, what are your people telling you that my people aren't telling me? I mean, there's something going on here, right? But I honestly think, and I don't know how you, and this comes down to where you're believers or non-believers. I mean, Kevin, I'll paraphrase because he's perfectly capable of talking on his own, but he said, you know, I just went and got my flu shot. He goes, I'm not anti-vaccine at all. I mean, my kids had measles vaccine and all the other stuff. He goes, I just think the incompetence all along the line regarding this disease, letting these companies in there, letting Pfizer, you know, come up with money for the tests, it just appears to me that this has been a cluster bleep from day one. And I don't think we've gotten a straight story anywhere along the line. He goes, it has to do with a credibility gap of the last two administrations and the people that work for them. He goes, it has nothing to do with me not believing that in just about all cases, vaccines are a good idea. I just think these guys there's a motivation behind this that it's pushed out too fast. This they told people that there was no treatment when there was. They did everything they possibly could to be wrong, and I'm just nervous about it because I just hope it doesn't turn out to be a big fiasco where we like kill kids and stuff. It's not like, you know, these people haven't thought the stuff out on the other side. I mean, as to why they're...
I agree. It makes sense to me. Like I said, I couldn't care less. People should be able to do whatever they want. Okay?
Yeah, and plus, you know, his point is, if they really work for you, what do you care about somebody else?
Agreed.
And because the point is, they're not working for you. In some cases, in the state of Minnesota now, people with the vaccines are getting just as sick as the people aren't. The fact is, these things are not working after eight months or whatever. And now the story is, we want to get a booster of the exact same shot. And I'm sitting there going, this shot should not be the same as it was 2 years ago, because it's a different variant. The shot should be different, shouldn't it? I mean, where am I wrong with this logic, Matty? They should be keeping up with this thing, right? And they're not. It doesn't appear. I mean, the incompetence all the way through, I just hope it doesn't land somewhere where we're giving shots to people and all of a sudden it's going to hurt them. I don't think we're there yet. Like I said, I took mine. But I'd be real
hesitant. How many people have taken the shot at, like, a billion now?
Probably.
So it's not hurting anyone.
Is
it helping people? I mean, I think it obviously is helping people, but can you still get COVID? Absolutely. So if you want to lock yourself in the house and not get it, or if you don't care about getting COVID, or if you already had COVID, then by all means, don't get it. What do I care?
Well, I think some people are digging through some of the thing is not the shot. Like no shot is has no reaction to anybody, and it comes down to what are the percentages. And if kids under the age of 12, it used to be, under the new variant, I think it's worse on kids, I'm not positive. If it comes down to, you know, 0.1% kids have a real problem with COVID, and you have a 2% problem with the vaccine, you don't give the shot, right? We all know that.
I would agree.
And I think that they're running over these numbers. I don't trust Pfizer to come up with the numbers for me. That's where I'm at with this thing.
I'm with you on that. There's obviously a very... conflict of interest right in front of you there.
I know Lou's doing with the, you know, suing regarding whether the thing is approved or not. He's very concerned that they're giving shots to people in the age of in the Army, age 18 to 26, that have already had the COVID, and there does appear to be, again, what those guys have come up with, some instances where it can really harm you if they give you the shot while you're developing your own antibodies.
Well, I was 37 when I got vaccinated. Also I had COVID, and I got vaccinated like quicker than the recommended time in between, and I was perfectly fine.
So, okay.
I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, like you said, are there edge cases on either side of things? I'm sure there are. But for God's sake, people need to, like, stop reading Facebook. Like, for God's sake, it's really not that complicated.
Well, if you go online right now and say,
want antibodies, whether they're right. natural antibodies or they're from right. the vaccine or they're both, it doesn't matter. You want antibodies. If you have the antibodies because you already had COVID, then you're probably fine, and don't get vaccinated then. I don't care.
Well,
if you didn't have COVID, I would recommend getting the antibodies because it sure as hell helps. And that's it. And if you had both like I did, I feel even extra safe.
But if you run on the internet right now and you say, if I had COVID, when should I get the shot? There's going to be articles on there telling you like the day you get out of quarantine. And I think that's wrong.
Why? Do you know something that I don't know?
Because I'm saying that it is.
It's a difference.
It's been dangerous.
I did it like 2 weeks or 3 weeks after, or maybe it was 4 weeks after.
How do you
after.
Know you're fine? Maybe we think you're a little off.
Been perfectly fine. Been to a okay. bunch of weddings, been to a bunch of group gatherings, been to sporting events, and haven't had I never get sick. I haven't had the flu I don't think I've had the flu my entire life. I rarely have a cold. And I did have COVID, I didn't really get sick from COVID either.
Do you have an S on your T-shirt?
No, I'm sure this will catch up to me at some point, but I've been lucky so far through 38 years.
All right, well, like I'm saying, there's a disbelief around on just about everybody, and they used to call the term used to be credibility gap, And I'm going to say our governments at every level, to me, have the biggest credibility gap I've ever seen. Anyway.
Well, they've always had that.
Maybe we have to, maybe, you know, maybe they have, maybe we just had to listen to them more this time. That could be it.
I think they've always had that. We've always had the fringes on all sides that are loud about it, and then most people are in the middle and don't care. It's just now the fringe is a lot louder on both sides, and that's all it is. I don't think anything's changed at all.
I think it makes people nervous when in their lifetime every vaccine that's come out's been like 5 to 10 years of people working on it, and all of a sudden you get one in 8 months, and the people telling you that it's good are the people who make it. There's people have a suspicion on that.
Yeah, well, that's there's no doubt the people that stand to profit from something are going to tell you it's good, whether it's not. That's up to you to find out. But after a billion people have taken it, I would say it's probably fine.
Well, okay, but you don't.
Well, how big of a sample size do you want?
Well, but I mean, you
it's
don't
been,
know.
It's been a year.
But you don't know how fine they are. Nobody's.
Well,
gonna
I don't know if it's if they're going to be fine. Are they going to get a reaction and die 50 years from now? I mean, I guess you could argue that, but I would say probably not.
All right.
You think they are?
What I know about the whole thing is that I read a lot of the original studies on how they did the sample size and what.
Well, the sample size now is about a billion people.
Okay, but what I'm saying
so
is
so how big do you want it to be?
What I'm saying is that when they told everybody to go get it, I've said 100 times I've been with them all along. I just wish they told the truth, because when they came out. The way they did the study on whether they worked or not, the original double-blind experiment, you know, where you gave some people a placebo and some people the other, all they tracked was deaths and serious illnesses that you reported yourself. They never tracked whether the people who got the vaccine actually were able to get COVID in a milder form. Now, I don't have any problem with that.
By the way, I was way off on how many people are fully vaccinated.
It's 1.5 billion or something?
No, it's 3 billion.
Okay.
So is that sample size big enough?
Well, how do you know how people are doing in India?
I don't. I know there's like five options, so it's one of the five.
Okay. So what I'm saying is I don't have any problem if that's what they would have told us.
Is 3 billion enough, a big enough sample size? I'm asking.
If I don't know the results, it isn't.
Well, we have, what, 7 billion in the world. Does it have to get to 7 billion?
No, but we told everybody.
Kevin's holding out, so it'll never get to all 7 billion.
No, but we told everybody that you weren't going to get it, right?
I didn't tell anyone that. I read from day one said you can still get it, and you can still transmit it, but it's not going to kill you, or it's much less likely to kill you or get you very sick. From day one, that's what I read.
The only reason why you read that is because you're on this show. If you were to give it to anybody else, would say, I'm not going to get it if I got it. Remember,
well, you're not entirely wrong about that, because there were friends of mine that I remember talking to saying, you know, they refused to do anything, including even playing softball outside, which I thought was crazy, until they got vaccinated. And I said, okay, fine, it's your decision, do whatever you want. But just so you know, you can still get COVID after you're vaccinated. No, you can't. I was like, yes, you can.
Well, that's because you listen to us.
So there were some people that thought that were in a bubble, I guess, but I never once thought that. And if you're saying that only you and me are the only ones that knew that, I would say that's probably not true.
All right, we have Hal here in a second, but my first question to you before we get off on COVID, which you dragged me off onto.
I never want to talk about COVID. Right. You talked about the coach getting fired. I couldn't care less about this.
What's going to happen to all these people? This thing was, I wish you'd have been here, because it went through the whole routine now that when the Black Sox scandal, that when the guy didn't pay after game five, they tried to win. And then they won 2 in a row and lost the 8th game. And this guy takes Shoeless Joe's performance through the 8 games and he claims it's consistent with the...
it's like what they say in Field of Dreams. Yeah. Kevin Costner, what did he say? He batted like 340 or something in the series. I'm making that batting average up. I can't remember, but it was a great batting average. He goes, how is this guy throwing the World Series? And he batted 340.
See, but you weren't here. Okay, what this guy has done here is he uses this win probability added. Almost all the good things that he did to get the batting average up to 340 were in games 6 and 7 after the gamblers didn't pay.
Oh, there you go.
So he's saying that if you take it game by game, it's very consistent with the fact that they threw it and then they didn't get their money and then they tried to win it.
There you go. That would make sense.
And he also claims that there were 3 triples to left field. I thought Shoeless Joe played center, but I guess he played left. He said, how often do you get 3 triples in left field?
Hardly ever.
Yeah. So Anyway, so you think he, Pete Rose, none of these guys ever get in? None of the steroid guys?
I don't know. I think eventually people will have a change of heart on Pete Rose, and probably the steroid guys too. Shoeless Joe, it's been 100 years, so is he ever going to get in? I mean, for God's sake.
Well, we could always go with the little shed out in the back where their names are. We have a different room. Anyway, SP Viewers up 17, Nancy Viewers up 86. Back of a rare treat, we have Mr. Helsner, Professor Helsner. He's going to straighten all this out. We got to put him on the Fed as soon as we get rid of Powell. Can we do that? I don't know. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Just Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 1750. NASDAQ Futures up 87. Professor, how are you, buddy?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We managed to make it through 24 hours of solid rain. Are you guys going to get any part of that storm coming your way?
Oh, it hit us first. I thought last night when I was in my office, I teach the directed studies after a class ends at 7:15 at night, and I thought a bomb went off because the rain was coming down so hard in the building. It was just crazy how loud it was. And then I walk outside, and it feels like I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina, when a hurricane is coming through. It was just crazy how much rain we were getting last night.
Are there going to be snow up high, or is it still too warm?
There's snow in the mountains. I think about a week and a half ago, I was driving to pick up my kids in the mountains about halfway down when you're driving toward the east. The top half of the mountains is covered in snow. So we're starting to get it. It's going to be a really powdery winter, man. I think we're going to get a lot of snow, and it's going to be a lot of powder up there. So if you like powder, come to Utah.
Well, are you dudes in the is your particular area in the drought areas or no?
Well, I think you could say that Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, we're pretty much always in drought. I mean, we don't get a lot of rain out here. But, man, when you get rain like yesterday, it's crazy. It was just pouring down, and we're still getting it this morning, but not as bad. I mean, there were puddles on the roadway last night. So I was driving the center lanes to avoid I think the water drainage system that we have was overly taxed because it was kind of pooling on the edge of the road, you know, as it slopes down.
Yeah.
We just couldn't handle it. Our roads couldn't handle it. It was a lot of rain.
Well, they could use like a half a lake down at Lake Mead in some of those places, so it's not like...
Yeah, definitely the reservoirs need to be filled up, that's for sure.
Well,
I mean, yeah, people move into states like Idaho and Utah, and it just taxes the water resources, so we definitely need to recharge our reservoirs.
Well, good. Yeah, I mean, that thing was, what they call it, the bomb something something. They had some name for the storm. It was like...
It was crazy, man. I mean, I haven't seen rain like this since we lived in Greensboro. I mean, when we lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, the only thing that we worried about with a hurricane coming through was, like, the tornadoes, right? Because by the time it got to us in Greensboro, it was just heavy rain and some wind. But the tornado warning was kind of scary sometimes. But, man, the rain we would get there in Greensboro was just massive. That's why I stopped riding my motorcycle, because during the spring it would just rain all the time. Fall, during the hurricane season, rain all the time. It's just not very much fun riding a motorcycle in the rain.
Well, is the topography by you guys, I mean, I know how it is here in Chicago. I mean, the rain soaks into the ground, at least for a while.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in Arizona or Las Vegas, as soon as it hits the ground, it runs someplace. Because nothing
well,
soaks
in
anywhere.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is go to Snow Canyon. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but Snow Canyon, you know, you got these sandstone carved water passages. It's really crazy where the water... I think that it was formed during the last glacial period, right, when the globe froze over during, you know, 4,000 years ago. So when those glaciers melted, it caused these one-time melt-offs to carve the landscape. But, man, if you haven't been to Snow Canyon or Moab, it's really crazy. It's really cool looking.
First time we went to Vegas, my buddy drags me out there. It's had, I don't know, 70 scandals went. There was, where the... what's the name of the place? The Imperial Palace, which is now another place. So, well, before that, there was this little motel there. And it was in the middle of the parking lot was a dry wash. And there was a yellow line saying, do not park here, like dry wash, but range your cars, you know, heading south. And in the downstairs, there were like three of the rooms, the motel rooms missing where the dry wash was, and I'm thinking, I'm really happy about the second floor. Just because every place there, I mean, the street between Caesars and the, is it the Bellagio? That street's a dry wash. You know, it rains really hard. One side of the street's like 4 inches of water, like racing down. I mean, it's all over the place because the stuff just wants to run. Are you guys like that where as soon as it hits, it just goes?
I don't think we're like that. I don't think we're like that. I think that's kind of like unique to Arizona, parts of Arizona, Nevada, maybe southern Utah. I think that's more unique to that stuff. But up here in Utah, I haven't seen rain like this. I mean, it's just nuts how much it was raining last night. I forgot my jacket, too, so I'm walking out there, and by the time I get to my car, I'm just completely soaked in rain because I didn't expect it.
Well, hey, so what's going on? I had a couple questions yesterday from people, and I was given my shtick because... regarding inflation and those kinds of things and what kind of danger this is. And then your buddy Jack, Twitter Jack, comes on and says we're going to have hyperinflation. Of course, the young lady on CNBC says the only reason why he's saying that is because he's a big Bitcoin guy, and Bitcoin will go up if people think there's inflation. So, I mean, you never really know when people are talking, whether they're talking from a, shall we say, an educational point of view or just to pad their own pocket. But my question to you is, how did we go from, at least at the end of the 70s and 80s, the monetary theory had, because we just had a huge experiment right in front of our very eyes.
Yeah.
We went to somewhat of an idea that this is what caused it, this is what did this, this is how you, and if you went back in history, of course, you could have figured that out before, you know, with, the Weimar Republic and all these other places that had inflation and so forth. I mean, it's not a whole lot of brain surgery to figure out what causes it and what you do to get rid of it, even though painful as it is. And all of a sudden, in the last 10 years, we ignore all that, and we even have people coming out writing alternative books like, none of that made any difference. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you pour in a system. How did all that make it through guys like you without these people flunking out of school? Well, I mean,
Well, I think it just goes back to the fact that people who are in a PhD program, they're thinking about, all right, where am I going to get my job at, right? So a lot of these guys, and I love them, you know, I love them to death, I love students, but if you're a PhD candidate and you want, and you're doing it for a reason, you want to get a job, maybe teaching, maybe you want to get a job in some big firm like PricewaterhouseCooper, or maybe you want to work for a politician. You want to be their economic advisor. So when you're a PhD program, you got to keep that stuff in mind. And I always tell my students that your style of PhD economics is partly determined by how you grew up. So if you grew up in New York City, you know, where government is substantial compared to like rural Idaho, you're probably going to be gravitating toward things like post-Keynesian economics. You're probably going to be gravitated toward Keynesian economics in general. Whereas if you grow up in rural Idaho, you're going to probably gravitate toward neoclassical economics, or maybe Austrian economics, right? So your formative years really inform your PhD economics. And then, I mean, so the kind of research you're doing, you're kind of like, you want to get a job working for maybe a Democratic politician or a Republican politician. So your research is going to be skewed in a way that makes you more likely to be hired by a Democratic politician or a Republican politician. And so you're looking for work, right, as a PhD economist. So I think what's happened is, I think it's pretty obvious, everything's become political. So when things become political, that's when people will start making really bad decisions. Non-economic decisions. And I think this goes back 300-400 years ago when early economic scholars would write a treaty, and an economic treaty, they're looking to get a job for the king, right? So they don't want to criticize the king. They're going to find evidence that supports what the king is doing, so they can get that nice cushy job as an advisor. I think that's all that's going on, because history repeats, and repeated history repeats repeatedly. This does not end well. What Trump did last year, what Biden's doing this year, in terms of fiscal stimulus, is not going to end well. The Fed is the enabler in this relationship, right? The Fed is encouraging these guys to do this because they're buying these bonds up, whether they're doing it directly or indirectly. So it just does not end well. And if you want my personal advice, buy your Christmas presents now and start socking some money away in some inflation hedge, because I think these guys are nuts, honestly.
I do too. I'm really stunned. This particular week, I think with these guys are going to talk next week about cutting back on some of it. They're bound and determined to have a record balance sheet next Monday, the day before they start talking about.
I don't think they can say that it's only $1.5 trillion. I don't believe it. They can use tricks to turn the $3.5 trillion into $1.5 trillion. But the problem with their bill is that once it's enacted, it's not going to be retracted. It's going to continue in perpetuity. So they can score it however they want. I don't believe it. They want $3.5 trillion. They're probably going to get $5 trillion, and they're going to label it as $1.5 trillion. So I just don't believe anything that they say.
Well, this is kind of an odd technicality, but you're closer to the way closer to the theory in the economic theory these days than I am, but. After all this time, how can there even be a Keynesian left? I mean, when I say that, when has there ever been an example of a pure Keynesian theory? I mean, when I say theory, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Keynesian theory means that the idea is you're going to have this fiscal stimulus where you're going to either borrow money or you're going to tax people. Right. Well, taxing probably isn't part of it, but that's what you have to do. And then the government's going to spend more money, either because you borrowed it, so that would be pure Keynesian theory, correct? When has that ever happened? Because without whatever Federal Reserve you happen to have, whatever country it is, without them printing money to go along with it, can you even think of all your research and of any time where there was a pure Keynesian experiment?
Well, I think it happened in the 1960s. I remember doing a little research when I was teaching macro at A&T State University, where the Kennedy, I think the Kennedy administration calculated the output gap, and they calculated, they had these multipliers, and they lowered the corporate tax rate, and it boosted economic growth, and at that moment it seemed to work really well. So what they did is, we got the 1970s. I mean, you had the expansion of the welfare state in the late 1960s. The interesting thing about Kennedy, though, is he lowered the tax rate from, like, I think it was like 90%,
yeah,
down to like 75%, and there was a I think there was a boost. I think all that happened is all this under the table work, or the, you know, the shielding your money from taxes. I think that just came to light, right? I think that explains the Laffer curve to some extent.
I think what Kennedy did, and I think I'm fairly right on this. I think he dropped, yeah, the top tax rate from 90 to 70.
Yeah, something like that.
And then,
yeah,
Reagan,
pretty substantial.
And then Reagan dropped it from 70 to 50. But
yeah,
I think there were so many deductions that people had that I'm not so, yeah, because they, every time they do that, they get rid of some of the deductions.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Thomas Sowell said that when the top marginal tax rate was in the 90s, there was, like, during the one given year, there was one guy paying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I guess his, he didn't mind paying taxes, or he wasn't very good at legally shielding his income from,
right,
taxes, right?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, but that's what, well, actually, it's another question I wanted to ask you. That was, when you, if you look at all this theory, I mean, clearly, if you're making a decision as to whether or not you're going to build a business, because this is what I used to do with Pullman all the time, and obviously we did a lot of this at University of Chicago, is if you think that the business might be successful, and if it's successful, you got to pay 70% to the government, but if it's not successful, it's 100% on you. Well, of course, you better have like a really good idea. You're not moving forward, right? I mean,
yeah.
So when you drop it down, I mean, I don't think there's any debate anywhere that dropping from 90 to 70 to 50 to probably 35 or 30, all those things are really good. But then once you drop it down because you have political power, and you drop it down to where corporations are paying 20 and individuals are paying 35, I don't think you gain that much. Because if you got an idea good enough to go forward at 25, it's probably good enough to go forward at 35. What I'm saying is, it's like interest rates. I mean, you and I probably would have no argument as to whether figuring out a way to get interest rates down from 7 to 6 is positive for society. If you get dropping them from 1% to 0.75%, I don't know if that's positive or not. I think it's probably negative, because the person who has the assets, you're screwing him, because he's not getting a fair thing back. I don't know that you. It's like, you know, running a marathon. Do you want somebody to drink some water? Yeah, but if you hand him 2 gallons, he'd probably be dead, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if any of this theory works at the edges, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, the Fed seems to think that if they go from $9 trillion to $10 trillion, somehow they're doing us a favor. I don't know. Hell, it looks to me like they have to do more and more to get us in the same place. Or am I wrong here?
Well, yeah, I think that's all. I think that's exactly right, because it's just like a drug. That first, I've never done heroin in my life. So, but that first hit of heroin, you get this massive high, right? But eventually your body gets used to it, so you need bigger and bigger hits for the same high. And I mean, the same thing with fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus. It's a drug. The Fed is the enabler, and as long as the Fed is going to print money to buy bonds directly or indirectly from Treasury, via the banks or just directly from Treasury, it enables these politicians to just double down and go ever bigger. And I just don't think it's going to end well. I mean, if you wanted to design policy, fiscal policy and monetary policy, to destroy the United States, I think they're on the right path. I just don't think this ends well. And I'm afraid of this, because I have 4 young kids. I'm actually afraid of what they're doing right now.
I am too, Hal. I really, yeah, am.
I'm scared. I'm scared about this.
The more I research, the more I dig back and spend my time looking at this stuff when I should be trying to get my golf game back together or something. I mean, the more I look at this, the more every time I look for an exception, how it could work, I feel worse about it.
Oh, I know. I do too. And I just think they have, the people that are working for these politicians, they're like the managers of Mike Tyson. Oh, Mike, you can do cocaine and you can have sex with hookers until 6 o'clock in the morning before the Buster Douglas fight, because all you need is one big punch and you're going to knock him out. I mean, that's what these advisors are telling these politicians, right?
Well,
because the politicians paying for this advice, right? So you're not going to tell them what they don't want to hear. You're going to tell them what they want to hear, right? And that happens on both sides of the political aisle.
But you know what makes me even more afraid? And I don't know if you feel the same way about these people, but I think the reason why the Constitution was written the way it was is because the people there, half of them were crooks. And they knew what it was like to be a crook. And they knew you're never going to stop it. So what you do is you have the checks on power, and you have enough people here, and you write it in such a way where you don't expect people to all be honest. And you design something to where it's self-policing in a lot of ways. And I thought that when I was growing up, all the stuff I've read about World War II and World War I in those areas, not as much about World War I, but the procurement and those kinds of things, It never struck me as the guy who was in the know couldn't get, 10% more for his PT boat engine contract than somebody else. I don't think it was 80%. I think it was probably 10% or 15%, because other people would have squealed if he did. And I think that the money he made, he or she made, mostly he in those days, was spent in the community, and at the end of the day, it didn't make all that much difference. But now, I think the big sleazeballs we have, we always had sleazeballs. Even John Rockefeller kept the money in this country. I mean, Carnegie spent his money here. These guys, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the people who are all over this Fed that are pushing this Jerome Powell around, I'm going to say maybe next Monday, if they actually start cutting back on this, which I don't believe, like you don't seem to believe it either.
No, they're not going to come back.
I think the people who have been riding this wave the whole way somehow get out of their crap Friday or Monday on the sly, and they're out of here. I got some stuff to talk about. We had a lady who used to do a lot of work for the show, and I hope I can get her back in now that the COVID's over. You talked to Kathy. Weren't you recruited by Kathy Durbin? Isn't that how we met you?
Yeah, exactly. She contacted me through, I think, email or Twitter.
Well, she just sent me something last week, and she's back on her game after the COVID. And I think she might have said it there. If Hal comes back on, ask him. She went through, I thought that the first biggest scandalous losers that I ever came across were the guys who were from ITT. Harold Janine, the original big conglomerate. And she sent me this thing about the East India Company.
Yeah.
And what big sleazebags those guys were, how they screwed up all over the world, the government had to bail them out. God, it's like reading today's newspaper.
Yeah. Well, you read about the Mississippi bubble. I think that involves, but it was a French, it was the first central bank of Europe headed by John Law, and Richard Cantillon was telling, he's one of my favorite economists, by the way, but he was telling John Law that this does not end well. And the word millionaire comes from the Mississippi bubble.
Really?
Because it created a bunch of millionaires. And Richard Cantillon's telling this guy, look what you're doing. Instead of backing printed money by government bonds, it's backed by mortgages, by titles. And so John Law was just pumping out money for the King of France. And Richard Cantillon's like saying, this is not going to end well, dude. And the difference between Richard Cantillon and Michael Bleury is Michael Bleury shorted mortgage-backed securities. Richard Cantillon was long. And so he kept telling John Law, man, this is going to blow up. And John Law's basically telling him, look, don't bring light to it, or I'm going to have the king cut off your head kind of thing, right? So Richard Cantillon says, all right. So he went long, and right before the bubble burst, Cantillon liquidates, and then he moves to Italy to make sure that he doesn't lose his head when the bubble burst, right? So he sold at all-time high prices, and then he retired in Italy. And the funny thing about Richard Cantillon is he ended up getting murdered, I think, by a servant or something. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just an old story, man. This stuff is not new. And like I said, I tell my students all the time, history tends to repeat, and history repeats repeatedly.
But how do we...
One of many iterations on the story.
But how do we forget... I mean, like I say, I was when I was first came in the business. Everybody knows this. I was the inflation guy at Pullman. I'm the one who did all the calculations. Well, there weren't that many, and it was pretty easy to do. It wasn't like I was a genius or anything to be able to figure out to add 2% to a contract because the CPI went up too much. I think most of us could do that, right? It wasn't like I needed a math degree, but I can't believe that in however many years it's been, we've collectively forgotten all this stuff. I was reading this thing about the Caterpillar strike, not Caterpillar, John Deere strike, and they're talking about they haven't had a contract in, I don't know, 2-3 years. I mean, I don't know the whole details, but they want a 5.4% raise. I'm sitting there, hell, for God's sake, they need about a 10 or 12% raise just to make up for the last year. And oh, by the way, they need a escalation clause. Nobody's even talking about it. There's a strike here in Chicago. They haven't had a contract for 3 years. They want a 3% raise. Three? What, are you out of your mind? I mean, the number should be like 15. In the last 2-3 weeks, maybe because it's been on the air more, every place I go, people are talking about inflation. And every restaurant, people are saying to the waiter, this was a buck cheaper last week. What are you doing? I mean, it's all over the place. When is, I won't say middle America because there isn't any middle America, when is the bottom 90% going to figure out that inflation is the cruelest tax of all and the bullseye is on them? And I hope we're not talking about people shooting people, but this is going to be real brutal real fast. I can't seem to find, you're supposed to talk me down on this. You're making it worse.
Well, you know, I can make it worse, Tom. I mean, think about this. Maybe, are these people this stupid? I mean, think about Jason Furman. He comes out and says inflation is a high-class problem. No, inflation is a high-class boondoggle.
Yep.
The wealthy get wealthier off this inflation because their assets are going up, right?
Right.
So it is a middle-class, low-class problem. Here it gets even freakier. If this is intentional, right, and say January inflation is running 10%, year over year, and that's probably underreported, right? So suppose the CPI inflation is 10% year over year. You don't think people are going to be outraged during an election year, during a midterm election year?
Oh,
what if the politicians come in and say, all right, they're going to do a Venezuela or a Haiti solution. They're going to just cap prices. Now you're going to have shortages everywhere. And in that situation, man, people are not going to have anything to eat. So it can get much worse.
When we come back, we'll talk about that because I'm going to say one of your heroes did just that. S&P futures up 18. I'm giving you grief here. NASDAQ is up 91. Be right back, Professor Helsner.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and one base action next. I'm Tom Howe. He's with Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 92. Dow Futures up 113. Individual stocks, we had they had earnings. UPS up $8 to 212. We have Microsoft up $1.67 at 309.80. That's kind of about it. Well, Tesla had their earnings yesterday, and they're the first billion-dollar company. They're down $8, so 1,016. I'm sorry, they're the next trillion-dollar company. Talk about that with
billion small potatoes.
Yeah, billion small potatoes. I mean, I didn't think in my lifetime we'd ever start winging a T word around this kind of
trillion-dollar market cap.
Now, well, what's the next one? What's your world going to be like?
Good question.
Quadrillions next, right?
Yeah, is it?
I think it is. Yeah, hell will know, but I think it's harder to say. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei 505, almost 2%, 1.8. Shanghai, how we're down 12 at 0.3%. Hang Seng down 93.3%, so a little bit of a mix there. We're in Europe, however, everybody up here. The X up 151, that's a full 1%. FTSE up 46.6%, CAC around up 49.7%, so bullish across the board there. Bonds unchanged at 1.63. The Bund down a basis point to minus 0.12. Japan positive 0.10, so Japan creeping ever so slowly higher, but really slowly. Oil up 47 cents, 84.23. I think that's probably the high of this run so far. Brent up 27 cents, 86.26. Natural gas down 9 cents to 5.80. Again, I want to ask Hal about that too. Wow, they went from 6.09 to 4.99 to 5.80 in probably, I'm going to say, 3 weeks, and we're not even in the wintertime. We're not even like a cold snap or anything. RBOB up 2 cents, 253. We've got gold down 10 bucks now, 17.96. Silver down 30 cents, 24.28. Not sure why that's happening. Copper down 2 cents, 4.50. And we've got Bitcoin down 408, 62,399. Eddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build steadily on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford experiencing some slow travel times as well. But no accidents to report. Earlier crash on the Tri-State at Grand Avenue is all clear, so that's good news. Looks like the only issues right now are off the expressways. Down on the south side, there's a structure fire. King Drive on the southbound side between 62nd and 63rd Street has crews on the scene working to put that out. And then you have to go out to the northwestern suburbs. We have a crash, US 20 between Bluff City Boulevard and Shales Parkway is closed due to a rollover semi carrying a load of garbage on its side. Most of the rubbish is in the turn lane from the southbound Shales Parkway to eastbound US 20. So keep that in mind. That's way out northwest, out near Elgin in that area. And then just northeast of there, Route 53 on the southbound side before Northwest Highway, there is a road construction that's causing a bunch of delays. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, some sunshine later on, cool temperatures, a high of 55. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 76 today. Right now it's clear and 69. In sports, the Bulls are 4-0 on the early season and now 2-0 on the road as they went up north of the border and beat the Raptors in Toronto 111-108. Blackhawks were off last night. They'll return to action tomorrow as the Maple Leafs come to town. Coyotes played. They lost to the Panthers 5-3. Monday Night Football, it was the Saints hanging on to beat the Seahawks in Seattle 13-10 in a rainstorm, low-scoring game. And the World Series gets underway tonight. Game one between the Houston Astros and the Atlanta Braves will take place down in Houston. It's a 7 p.m. Central Time first pitch. The Astros are favored to win the series. Cheap.
Does anybody have starting pitching that's liable to go like 8 or 9 innings? Either team? Do you got anybody like that?
Well, they have guys capable of that. It's a matter of, is your manager going to let you do that?
Well, as soon as you give up a hit, you got to get pulled. We know that.
The bullpen arms are so good that they want your pitcher to give you a 6 strong, and then we got a 7th inning guy, 8th inning guy, 9th inning guy that are all going to throw 100 miles per hour, and we think we can get out of here pretty quickly and save some bullets for you in Game 4 and possibly Game 7.
Yeah, well, that's so, Hal, I did a little bit of, when I knew you were coming in here, I did some little bit of work here, and it's, here's, because somebody asked yesterday what my view of where we're going with this, and you tell me that I'm all messed up here probably, but I've got for the last, from February 2012 to February 2020, I've got us money supply numbers up 7.3% a year, all right? And they've got us, they said they could never get to inflation at 2%, which I thought was total BS the whole way, because if you looked at the hospitalization and you looked at schools and tuition and you looked in areas where they didn't count, I think the inflation that entire period of time was at least 5%, maybe 6. Then for the last, from February 2020 to April of 2020, August 2021, which is 18 months, I've got us at a 23% annual rate. The last 6 months, it's 11.5, and the last month, it's 15.4, where I think they're dying to pour as much money in they can before they start to taper, and they want to start to taper at like record high levels of the balance sheet. And I'm estimating that this year, next year, we're talking inflation rate of a minimum of 15%, and it gradually comes back down to like 11 or 12. Please tell me I'm wrong someplace. I don't think I am.
I don't. Honestly, I kind of agree with you. I do, man. I don't think this ends well. What kind of are you using? What index are you using?
I'm using just M2.
M2. Okay, that's a good one, because if you use M1. Right before the pandemic started and the lockdown started, they basically made M1 equal to M2.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So, yeah, you definitely want to use M2 in this case. Because I think some people are talking about, man, there was a huge jump in M1. But when I looked into it, yeah, they basically became the same,
yeah, they,
same time series.
They
yeah.
messed with that. And, by the way, they don't give us weeklies anymore. Have you ever seen anything more?
Yeah.
Out of all the arrogant things government has done, have you ever seen anything more arrogant is to stop giving us the numbers?
Yeah. And they stopped publishing the multipliers. If you want a multiplier, you have to go out and calculate it yourself.
Well, and you don't get the M2 for August till like September 25th.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, what are they doing? They're trying to hide the truth from us, right?
Well, first of all, I got to believe that the real guys are still getting those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, why? It's just why are people? Why do people believe this crap? You know? I mean, I don't get
honestly,
it.
I think most people, as long as that shoe that, you know, because you know it's a Roman metaphor. As long as there's no pebble in your sandal, you're going to kind of just go along. I think people have lives, they have kids, they got to worry about putting food on the table, they got to pay their rent, and as long as that stuff is going okay, this stuff continues to happen. Right, this yeah. kind of stuff goes on. But it gets to the point where, you know, 5% inflation becomes pebble in your sandal. And people are going to stand up and say, hey, something's wrong here, right? And the thing I'm worried about is I think the education, that our education system in America, the public school education system, not, I think on average, it has uneducated Americans. Not educated them, it has uneducated them.
Why is that? If it just happened by accident, this is what, since last time you ran, I've made kind of a mental metamorphosis. Yeah. I used to honestly think that when people made mistakes like this, like Volcker, I think, made some pretty nasty mistakes, the Resolution Trust, I always thought that people were well-meaning and just bleeped up, you know, because I've been in boardrooms where, you know, the best of efforts by the best of guys can come up with the crummiest of plans, and I just always thought it was, but now every single time it seems like the same people get benefited by these alleged mistakes. I'm not so sure they're mistakes anymore. I think it's all planned out.
They're mistakes, or it could be the fact they're mistakes because there's too much groupthink.
Maybe.
In the decision-making body, or it could be intentional.
I think it's intentional. I mean, this blow up of the market here, when you talk about these, you know, some of the money. I mean, every day last week, for God's sake, there's $12 billion sitting on somebody's desk. It has to get spent someplace, right? And a lot of it goes into the market, goes into the bond market, and you know, and hey, 10% of the people own 90% of the stocks, right? So I mean, it's not like we can't figure out who the, you know, a lot of those are my clients, by the way, and I want them to do well. So it's not like that. So are you mentioned before the break, you mentioned something like, you don't think we're going back to wage price controls, do you? Like Tricky Dick?
Well, I mean, just think about this. If inflation ends up being 10% on an annual basis, say in January or February of a midterm election, and the people demand that government do something, I mean, is it possible that they might propose to cap prices? I mean, they do that during a hurricane.
Yeah.
They'll cap gas prices during a hurricane, right?
I got a great off-color story for you. Anybody with sensitive ears, I won't be graphic, but my boss, my first job was at Allied Van Lines, right? And my boss was in the executive program. He's the VP of Finance of Allied Van Lines. Nice guy. And one hell of a handball player, Bob Seeler. He's in the executive program, right? Now, the executive program back in those days is all the VPs of finance would go down and they'd go to class on a Friday or Saturday. Do you guys have one of those, an executive program?
Well, we have an executive MBA program. I'd like to do an executive, like, data analytics program on, like, Friday afternoons. That'd be kind of cool, I think.
Well, these guys would go on Friday, and then immediately they'd head to... They loved the Friday day because everybody got the day off, and they all hopped in a cab, professors included, and they all head over to Martini's to drink Martini's and really talk about business. Well, Bob and two other guys hop in the back seat, and, of course, Walter Fackler, you probably remember that name. He was the dean of the business school, right? So he, of course, gets the front seat spot. He's riding shotgun. He's sucking on his big stogie. And the guy in the back seat goes, Dean Fackler, what do you think of wage price controls? So he takes a big draw of the stogie, all for emphasis, and goes, boys, wage price controls did for the economy what pantyhose did to fill in the blank. The guys in the back are going, what did he just say? he obviously wasn't too big at wage and price. Because I remember. I was around when that happened, and I remember, I think I was in college, but I remember there were so many exceptions, Hal.
Yeah.
It would be like today, but there weren't as many lobbyists, but it was like there's wage price controls on everybody, except if you were McDonald's and you could prove that the price to you of hamburger went up, you got to raise it up, plus something. It was amazingly complicated to the point where everybody who'd gotten their fingers on the thing before it came out could raise prices whenever they damn well felt like it, other people couldn't.
Yeah.
So it was
well, that's how it works. That's how government policy works, right? The few privileged groups that have the power can carve out exemptions for themselves, right? They're exempted from the policy. And this is why socialism, communism, central planning doesn't work, because it interferes with the price mechanism. And these firms or these wealthy investors, they have the button. They can push the button to influence the politician to carve out the exceptions for themselves. And the people that get screwed by that are people in the middle or at the bottom.
But
you don't have any power.
But at some point, even the people doing it have to realize that it's too much. I mean, I guess it hasn't happened here. I mean, if Governor Pritzker and I don't know what the hell the guy's, if he doesn't have stock in Target, he and Lori Lightfoot, maybe they don't. They got to be the dumbest people on earth because they gave this city over essentially to the big box stores during the COVID.
Yeah.
Everybody else has to close, but since you guys have food, you can sell blue jeans and the other guys can't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so ignorant. I can't even go there. I mean, it.
Besides, you know, the genocide. But if you look at the Nazi, if you set aside that and you look at the Nazi economic policy, I'm not equating the Republicans and Democrats with Nazism. But if you look at Nazi economic policy, the Nazis did not want small businesses. They wanted several large corporations because hurting large corporations is really easy.
Yep.
You can't herd small enterprises because that's like herding chickens. And all I see is that with what these politicians are doing at the local and the federal level, right?
You know who you agree
with? It's hard to herd small enterprises.
You know who you absolutely agree with? I don't know if you listen, but you and Lou are on the exact same page, although he doesn't call it Nazi economic. He calls it the fascist economic system.
Yeah.
Every industry is two or three firms with their nose basically up the ass of government.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that's exactly where we're heading right now.
There's a movie that's on, I think, Prime that talks about the origins of Puma and Adidas. They come from two brothers in Germany. One was open to working with the Nazis, you know, contracts. And the other one was kind of like, they sold their shoe. I think it was Adidas gave their shoe to Jesse Owens.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a fascinating movie about the origins of Puma and Nazi economic policy or fascist economic policy.
Well, Hal, I'm sure you get in discussions because I've been with you. We have no problems discussing and learning from each other.
Yeah.
And that's how you, when you have what you just said is, you know, well, we don't want to be, I'll go someplace and if people think for a minute I'm not on the right, you know, which I'm not, I'm in the middle. Actually, you know where I put myself? I put myself as an Adlai Stevenson, Paul Simon Democrat, which doesn't exist anymore, right?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't exist anymore. So I know a lot of my Republican buddies put themselves as an Everett Dirksen, Peter Fitzgerald Republican, and they don't exist anymore either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of people around who don't have a party, me being one of them. But I'm sure I'm not.
Well, I don't either.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even have a school of economic thought that I belong to.
I do, but those guys are all dead.
Well, mine is a new one, and it's only got one member in it. I'm a kind of a neoclassical. I like neoclassical models, but I interpret them with Austrian principles, so I call it neoclassical.
Wow. Well, nobody knows what that means, but.
But
you know, when people start talking about you don't want, you know, AOC, you know, she's socialist or she's communist. The first thing I do is I what I can usually diffuse the argument is, well, then what exactly would you say we have right now? And they go, what do you mean? We're capitalists. I said, no, we're not.
No, we're far from capitalist.
We're far from capitalist.
We are neo-mercantilist.
Yeah, that's a great name, by the way.
Yeah.
I said, name me. Do you think this three or four big firms all over what the government can push around is competitive? I said, name me five businesses right now, even though we've had a couple of cocktails, that are competitive. I'll give you a few. Maybe the barbers, maybe the beauticians.
Well, I think
saloons.
Restaurants are.
Restaurants and bars.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you're still in your corn and your soybeans, those kinds of things. After that, I'm running out of gas. Where do you go? And they go, well, when you think of it that way, I said this is not competitive. And you
not
know,
at all.
You know what's really this might be educational to you, Carl. The idea that the government is pushing down on firms to make them do their dirty work for them.
Oh yeah, you can see that with the vaccine mandate.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, in my industry, this is not new. And I bet you know all about this because they're doing the same thing in colleges. But in my industry, the regulators, unbeknownst to anybody outside the industry, probably or somebody who's ever pulling the strings, or that somebody is, they really are demanding that we in the securities business, small firm like PTI, really has their nose up their up the ass of your employees as to what they do on weekends and any other jobs they may have.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we push back on that, you know, as hard as we can, which, you know, how hard can you push back against a regulator, really? But I know a couple of guys have just applied to Charles Schwab. You cannot have a second job. I mean, if you paint a house on a weekend and they find out about it, they're going to fire your ass.
Yeah.
I mean, so they've taken the government mandate and they've run with it. So yeah. You're right. It's a lot easier to push around a Charles Schwab who feels like they're one of the five or anointed ones than it is to push around 25 PTI securities.
Well, I guarantee that in the financial industry, after what they did to Lehman Brothers, let that company fail and then bailed out the other companies that made just as bad decisions.
Yep.
I tell you what, those guys are in lockstep, man. When the government whistles, they jump in line, man.
Oh, sure.
There was a reason why Lehman Brothers allowed to fail.
But everybody thinks this thing with the COVID, no, we can't tell you to take the vaccine, but your boss is going to tell you to take the vaccine. This is just the next step. It's not like they're trying they're trying this stuff, you know, this isn't the first time anybody's thought about it. But who's behind this? Who wants people? I mean, in this country, I don't want people like, I don't want to be telling my neighbor what to do. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why all of a sudden have people decided that they have to tell other people what to do? Where did that come from?
Well, this came up in a class last week about misinformation. You know, I don't consider it misinformation. I consider it people exchanging opinions and ideas. And when they're allowed to engage in these discussions, they can modify their opinions. When you tell people that what they're saying is misinformation, that you're going to ban it, all you do is you create a division. And when people are further, when they go further and then silence people by taking them down off of media, social media, then they have no outlet and you create rage. So I think it's all an effort to conform us. That's why socialism doesn't work, because for socialism to work, everybody has to think exactly alike. There has to be this conformity. And this is all an effort to conform people. And it just doesn't end well.
Well, I mean,
I believe in free exchanges of ideas, products and services.
Well, why
we're adults and we can handle it.
Well, why but it's never been new though. I mean, I know the Shakespeare line, but what was the Greek line before it? Shakespeare said, "Who will guard the guards?" And wasn't it Plato that said, "Who will watch the watchers?" If you say, you know, I'm no fan of Facebook because I think people take their brain and whatever disengage their brain and anything. But but you know, it's not accusing everybody. But the point is, I don't want what's his name Zuckerberg being my censor. But the minute you get to somebody should stop the misinformation from being on Facebook. My first question is, just like Plato, and all of them know Plato, all right, who's going to watch the censor? Who gets to be the censor? And that's the reason why we have a constitution the way it is. The fact is, there can't be a censor. Because once there is, I mean, it doesn't mean that if you say, you know, go kill God or something, that the Tribune has to print it. You know, you're free to take your little go kill God thing and nail it on the board in downtown Chicago that's there for people to put dumb stuff up on. You get to say it. I mean, it doesn't mean that you get the right to have Facebook tell 9 bazillion other people that you said it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know how we get to that, how we ever solve that moral issue. I mean, the Tribune doesn't have to print my really dumb letter to the editor.
Yeah, they don't have to.
Because as soon as they do, it becomes their ink, their paper, and their responsibility. So, you know, as usual, people's ability to do dumb things kind of outstrips the morals of whether they should be able to do it or not, right? I mean,
I think when you start silencing people and you only allow one form of speech to be heard, that can lead to violence, because when you are all of a sudden silenced and you can't say anything, people got to be able to be heard. And I think when you silence them, that's when things get really nasty.
And most people don't want to be heard.
That's when violence rises. People have to be able to speak. People have to have conversation and disagreements and dialogue so they can modify poorly formed opinion. right? When you stop that and you silence people, now that's no longer going on, and so you spin both sides up, and they're in these echo chambers, and you amplify, right, these wrong, poorly informed opinions. You amplify them into action, and that becomes a problem. And well, it might be purposeful.
Well, right? We're certainly doing it with the economics. I mean, look at the poor economics we got people at office doing because it benefits them.
Yeah. Well, it's neo-mercantilism, right?
Yeah.
This is not a market system that we're in. This is neo-mercantilism.
Hey, speaking of which, you've used that term a bunch of times. How about we have you back one of these days and we go through the history of what that exactly means? Because it's fascinating.
Article I had my students read in Macro Principles class. It's written in the 1980s and it was published by the Federal Reserve. It's like a Federal Reserve blog or something before there were blogs, web blogs. It's fascinating because it goes through mercantilism, and when you read that, you're like, that's exactly what we have today.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Dutch did that. They were the first, right, pretty much?
Yeah.
All right, bud. Well, hey, good luck to you. I'd like to see you again one of these days. There's going to be so much snow out there. Who knows? Maybe, I don't know, if I came down came downhill these days, it might be money manager takes out lift line, nine die. I don't know if I want to see that.
Well, but you'd land on the softest powdery snow on the planet, so you wouldn't be hurt.
Oh.
You'd probably laugh.
And then after three people pick me up. Anyway, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 88. Yeah, I don't want to be the three guys having to haul me out of the powder. Well, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.